Hey everybody, it is December 18th, 2025, and welcome to a what I always consider a special episode, but in this case, this is a major way to end the year because I have Matthew Zachary, or MZ, as he's commonly known, a big advocate for healthcare. As you all know, I have been on my Voices of Disruption campaign since about September or October. I've had last week Todd Otten. A few weeks ago, I had Dale Atkins. I also had Tom Ingenio. Everyone knows that I've been speaking to Marshall Runge and so many other big medical advocates and voices of disruption. The reason why I find MZ to be the perfect way to end the year before the holidays is because you're going to hear a story of survival. He was diagnosed with brain cancer, and I will let him go right into the whole experience of being diagnosed, going through treatment, and beating the odds, which is one major aspect of this episode. The other thing you're going to learn about, again, when he dealt with that struggle, what did he do about it? He did many things. And I will cover, first of all, his non-for-profit, which is called Stupid Cancer. Then his podcast, Out of Patience, PATIENTS. And then we'll wrap up the show talking about a movement that he's going to be engaged in 2026. Because as everyone knows, all of us are going to be challenged with our healthcare at the beginning of the year. Now, that all being said, let me issue my disclaimer. There may be views, opinions, maybe even some curse words, which we are trying to avoid at best, but you know, when you're passionate about what you're talking about, sometimes you just let it go. That being said, if you find it uncomfortable or if you feel dissuaded by anything that we're talking about, that's okay. Turn off the show. However, for those of you who are really fighting as vehemently as you will discover MZ has been doing, and as vehemently as I have been doing over the last 6 months in particular, you stay tuned because you're going to find out a lot of outcomes and how you can also become involved. All right. So that's basically my disclaimer. We're not here to dissuade you, but we're here to raise your voice and spread your opinions. That being said, we are live. If you want to reach out to me or MZ in particular, if you're watching YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitch, give your comments or questions. And our engineer Jesse will read them out loud and we'll let us read them out loud and we'll try to answer them live. All right. But otherwise, Matthew, thank you for coming to Frank About Health. I think we were discussing this show for like 60 days already, you know. But of course, thanks to also Tom and Todd, you have been talked up on many levels. And I'm really glad we're going to express all of what you've been doing and what you will be doing in the new year. And you have to unmute first, but then get ready to just share your story.
There we go. Hello. It's a good thing I have all these people on payroll because they're supposed to say nice things about me.
Exactly. And they do. Trust me, they do. No, but that being said, again, talk about your story, brain cancer. I mean, I'm amazed. Well, you even told me you're amazed that you're still here. You were given 6 months. I want to know how it became a gift in disguise for you.
It's a good way to put it. So, first of all, thank you for having me on the
You're
program.
very
I don't do a
welcome.
lot of live shows, so this will be really fun. And
Yes.
hello, everyone watching. It's great to meet you. I'm
Yes.
Matt, or he says MZ.
Yes.
I tend to want to tell my story through the lens of history because it's been 30 years. So, I kind of couch how I explain what happened to me through this perspective and retrospective, because I was pretty much diagnosed with brain cancer over an answering machine blinking in my parents' bedroom. So that's a very Gen X thing to say from 1995. But my upbringing was on Staten Island in New York. My parents were teachers, and I was a gifted kid, and I started playing piano because my mom played. And I became a protege. And I
Nice.
loved every second of it. I memorized. I became a human jukebox in the 80s.
Very good.
Classical lessons, jazz lessons. I played for Sing, the talent show. I produced some musicals. Went to college for music composition and film theory. And I was aspiring to be John Williams, my hero. And I spent the entirety of my first 3 years in school doing nothing but immersing myself in composition, theory, history, musical theater, jazz studies, classical studies, tons of rehearsals, recitals, productions, and X, Y, and Z. It's
Nice.
rare to know what you want to do when you grow up at 19 years old, but I was
Right.
that kid.
Perfect.
So, in between junior and senior year college, the summer of 95, I
Right.
interned at the World Trade Center. And I started to experience very weird headaches. And they were not normal headaches, like, front of the brain migraine stuff. It was kind of in the back by my left ear. And
Wow.
you're 21, you're invincible. Who cares, right? I thought it was just the elevators and the vertigo, because those elevators, anyone privileged enough to ever have been in those towers
Yes.
knows that those elevators were powered by the flux capacitor. So they gave you lots of vertigo. And
Wow.
I just wrote it off. But when I got back to school in September, I noticed right away that my left hand wasn't as dexterous as it was, because I didn't play much over the summer.
Right.
In music nerd land, that's called arpeggiation. It
Okay.
is the speed at which your fingers can move across the keys, like fine motor skills.
Yes.
And my left hand wasn't performing as well as my right hand. So I thought, all right, I'm just rusty. I'm 21, I'm invincible. And that was it. I just had trouble playing. I had trouble gripping a pen because I was a lefty. And I had trouble typing because we had like crappy computers back then with the clackety keyboards.
Yes.
Everything just got exponentially more difficult for me that semester. And my friends were like, Matt, what's wrong with you? And like, I don't know. I just kind of powered through and went to the campus doctors. They thought I had carpal tunnel syndrome or some kind of, I don't know, you name the thing they were wrong with. Epstein-Barr, mini stroke, MS, put your backpack on this shoulder, take some Robitussin. Clearly, none of that were alleviating my symptoms.
Correct.
But by the time I got back for Thanksgiving, everything really started to exacerbate. And I had a fainting spell, and I began to slur my speech. And
Wow.
that's kind of when it really hit me that maybe there's actually something wrong with me, and I should tell my parents,
Right.
which I did over Thanksgiving break. Of course, they panicked.
Yeah.
My pediatrician at the time said, you should get a what are the, an EEG, like go see a neurologist.
Yes.
And again, in my ignorant innocence and invulnerability, I said, I'm kind of busy. I have finals. I got two shows to produce. Can I just come back in 2 weeks? And famous last words. So everything went to shit in those 2 weeks. I got back, went for the neurologist. He's like, I can't help you. Go get an MRI. We're
Right.
like, what the hell's an MRI? This was 1995, folks.
Right.
So, oh, you just stick your head in the tube for 2 hours and they tell you something wrong with you. Okay, great. So this is the story of the answering machine. My mom and
Right.
I, on December 27th or 28th, 95,
Wow.
30 years ago, in 2 weeks as of this taping,
Exactly.
is went in for the scan, came out, went to lunch, got back home, and the machine was blinking. No one calls you at 1 o'clock on a Thursday. They're watching soap operas.
Yes.
So Days of Our Lives was on, the blinking machine. Yeah, we found something, come back. It was pretty much what the answer was. So we went back, another scan, and they found this giant orb in my cerebellum. And then
Wow.
we need to meet with the neurosurgeon. Like, what? So then Friday night, one of the kindest, most gentle mensches I've ever known, Orthodox Jew,
Right.
took off on Shabbos to meet with my family and I, my parents and I. My brother was at school.
Yes.
and explain exactly what the hell was going on. And he said, there's a mass in your brain and it's got to come out.
Yes.
And that's what's been causing all these insane side effects that
Right.
have been plaguing you. And that's probably why no one properly diagnosed you, because a pianist who can't use his left hand properly is not typically a sign of brain cancer.
Right. It could be carpal tunnel or something like that.
Yeah. So, slight fast forward, I had a full craniotomy, like old school gulag, rip your head open for 8 hours surgery. Again, we've had lots of progress since then. That doesn't necessarily happen
Obviously.
anymore, which is good.
Yes.
Took it out, sent it to the pathology, in the hospital for 8 days, woke up, went home, and I could play again.
Awesome.
With a caveat, and so it's an
Okay.
asterisk. Because I hadn't used my left hand the way I should have been,
Right.
the muscle memory was gone and my dexterity had atrophied. So I had to rehab myself all over again. But wait, there's more, because the tumor came back malignant. They thought it
Okay.
was benign, it came back malignant. There was no doubt, it was completely corroborated by all the medical practitioners. And they're like, all right, now you're not done yet. Don't go back to school. We're not quite sure if you'll be here by June. In not so many terms, that was what the impression was that my parents and I got from
Yeah.
these doctors. It was called a medulloblastoma. That's the name of the tumor. What makes it unique is that it's the only brain tumor you are born with. It develops while you are a fetus in utero, and it only grows in your cerebellum. So that's why it was back by my ear.
Oh, wow.
So I had to go through all sorts of Chernobyl easy bake oven level radiation for 33 days. And then we had a chemo conversation, which I actually said no to, but I think we can cover that after the break, because that's my cliffhanger for you.
You're right.
Because the one through thread of everything I went through that matters today is this story of my Uncle Jay and why I said no to chemo.
And we just got a comment. They call it an easy bake tumor.
That's it, the easy bake tumor.
All right. And it's timely because we are ready for our first break, but I want to make sure we cover everything that you are now doing further. So I guess what we'll do is we will respond to the cliffhanger and then go right into stupid cancer and how that evolved into out of patients.
Yep, and that's a
All right.
much quicker trip than the first part of the story.
Okay, perfect. So, ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned right here on this episode of Frank About Health, as we are discussing about MZ's journey through cancer and what he's going to do about it in the future for all of us survivors and all of us dealing with various illnesses. We'll see you in a few.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Just had to quote that. That all being said, welcome again, Matthew, for coming to this, I guess, end of year episode, because I know the way we end the show and we'll discuss further is going to be a nice Christmas gift to everyone going forward. So that being said, I want to get the answer to your cliffhanger and then go right into how you came up with Stupid Cancer and ultimately Out of Patience, your podcast.
Yes. Again, like the first part triggers a much faster downstream about how I got from here to there. But again, right. This Uncle Jay story is what matters most to everything I say today, 30 years later, because it does speak to some similar problems that still exist in the ether of American healthcare.
Yes.
And I'll give the brief story, but basically my dad's best friend is Dr. Jay Tischfeld. Anyone listening or watching this can Google his name. He's a very famous geneticist from the 70s and 80s.
Nice.
And he's my godfather. So when I was going through this care, he was very closely monitoring all this stuff. But when we got to the, you're done with surgery, you're done with radiation, your easy bake tumor, Chernobyl therapy is over now. We want to give you chemotherapy. And Jay's like, what chemotherapy do they want to give you? As if we knew that word meant more than one thing.
Right.
And they basically said, we're going to give you this. And Jay's like, I want to understand what's in the cocktail, because chemotherapy back then was like, they only made like seven medicines existed back in the 90s for chemo.
Yes.
And it turns out that the doctors didn't explain this part to me, which is the part that was most frustrating. But Jay noticed that two of the chemicals that were in there would have given me, at the dose they were preparing for, near permanent hearing loss. Wow. And near permanent neuropathy in my fingers and toes.
Mm.
Now, I was a recovering concert pianist, and all I cared about at 22 years old was reclaiming, I sense, that musicianship that, yes, I might ever go to grad school in a meaningful way, because I couldn't go that fall. I could wait till the next fall of 97.
Right.
Jay said to me, Matt, you don't want chemotherapy. Even if it extends your life by 80 years, who will you be if you can't hear and you can't play piano?
Exactly.
So can you imagine a 49-year-old man telling his 22-year-old godson that you'd rather die in a year or two or three? Because that was the prognosis. Once they said, oh, you're alive, great, let's figure out how long we think you're going to live for.
Yeah.
I'd rather die in 5 years or less, taking a risk of not doing this, if I could be a musician through my 20s, than live a full life deaf and basically, you know, my fingers were mute.
Right.
The doctors never even thought to tell me those were the side effects of their protocol. They didn't have even the slightest empathy that we're going to give this kid that we nearly just killed with radiation and surgery no life, but he might live. So we went to that meeting. I said, we don't want chemotherapy. I'd rather die in 5 years as a musician. They yelled at us. They said, how dare you question our authority? And I walked out. And on May 27th, 1996, was my last day as a cancer patient and my first day as a cancer survivor.
Nice.
So the thread from that to Stupid Cancer was pretty straightforward. I didn't really have a 20s. I was burned and skinny. I couldn't eat. I was impotent and fertile, you know, bald, everything else. But I muddled through Plan B, which is, I worked in the advertising industry for about a decade just to get by. Couldn't date, couldn't have, all my friends went to grad school. Right. But I muddled through long enough to rehab my left hand. And I started giving private piano concerts for fundraisers for cancer research.
Right.
At one of those events, I was espied by another young man who became my first cancer buddy. I didn't even know it was possible to have a cancer buddy.
Right.
And this guy named Craig Lustig, he's still a really one of my best friends on the planet, worked for Livestrong, those yellow wristbands back in the day.
Yes, I remember.
And he sat down with me and said, Matt, how would you like to be a cancer advocate? He was a young adult survivor. with brain cancer in his 20s. He was also bald and Jewish from New York, and he went to Binghamton. He was a year ahead of me.
Right.
So the man ticked 8 boxes on our first date, and I said, what the hell is a cancer advocate? This is 2003. He's like, well, it kind of means that maybe the next year we'll have a less crappier time going through this. I'm like, all right, I'm sold. What do I do?
Right.
So then I spent 3 or 4 years peeling myself away from my day job, and I learned about how there was a massive disequity in Gen X. There were kids and boomers and seniors, but the Gen X world, we were kind of screwed because no one cared that we were in this nebulous age group. We get different cancers. We're misdiagnosed. We're delayed diagnosis. We have different needs. Our gonads should be working. We should be able to go out on dates. So I wanted to start a populist brand that targeted Gen X to give us a collective voice.
Yes.
And that's where Stupid Cancer came from. And by today's standards, that's a demure name.
Right.
But in 2005 and 6, that was a shocking thing to do.
Yes.
Is create something populist in Cancerland.
Pushing the envelope, but for a good cause.
And it worked. It became like this really phenomenal juggernaut populist brand that galvanized hundreds of thousands of people around the world to belong to something that they didn't know they needed.
Yes.
And the milestone of running that organization for 13 years was I became the world's first healthcare podcaster, but they didn't call it that back then. It was Internet Talk Radio.
Just like here, talkradio.nyc, which was called at that time Talking Alternative Broadcasting. But
yeah,
I understand.
So
we were evolving together.
Internet Talk Radio, streaming live on Mondays from 8 to 9 Eastern. The Stupid Cancer Show, you know, went live May 27th, 2007, and I haven't shut up since for 18 years. So
Nice. That's
kind of what led me to what I'm doing today, because when I stepped down in 2019, I took the show with me because the organization couldn't do anything with the IP once I left. So then I renamed the show Out of Patience. And I've now produced close to 800 episodes of Out of Patience, plus the 700 I did with the Stupid Cancer Show, to now very proudly be the longest standing independent healthcare podcaster on the planet.
Awesome.
And it's been very, very gratifying.
Wow. So, I mean, I have lots of questions, being that I think I'm on my 169th show, or at this point, Frank About Health began during COVID time, but yet I, being an epileptic individual, was focused on just one niche, similar to you, but although cancer is a much bigger niche to focus on. So for me, it's all been about health advocacy going forward. What do you think is motivating you to keep with the longevity, even though the fact that you're the longest standing one, and what kind of moments in your life have allowed you to drive you to continue, even when you must have had your share of frustrating moments or guests or situations?
Honestly, I've only not produced 2 episodes that I recorded because the guests were like subpar. I mean, pandemic, yes, I use Zoom and other platforms, but I'm a purist in the radio sense. The Stupid Cancer Show had a studio, like a real radio studio, and we had live guests. And on occasion, if someone was international, we had Skype. And we didn't do video. But the purism of radio is kind of where I put my flag on the ground. Radio is an art form. Your voice is an art form.
Yes.
Anything video is television. That's video broadcasting isn't podcasting. I'm a hardcore on this. And right now my show is live. I'm actually here in my studio now near Penn Station. I record live. But what's kept me enjoying this, I've monetized my show, so it's a living at this point now.
Yes.
But I have the privilege of saying things that are in other people's heads that they can never say. I have the privilege of being a unique personality, a unique sort of civic critic, a unique sort of populist American advocate for very specific issues. I'm not the cancer guy anymore. I opine, wax poetic, and curse profusely at many, many different things these days.
Yeah.
So that to me is like, dopamine. I enjoy it. I love the pedigree. I love being independent. I'm not beholden to a larger system. I love distribution partnerships. I love working with brands. I love elevating and highlighting causes that are valuable to me. And I love it being one of the only ways people can get in touch with me. Because I'm not into that Gary Vaynerchuk crap where you got to be everywhere like Jackson Pollock.
Oh, you mean like Spotify, Apple, Pandora?
No, I mean like TikTok and Instagram and X and Discord and Substack. Gary Vaynerchuk, mad respect to that guy. But splattering everything at the wall is not a great strategy when you are an audio guy.
Correct.
So if you want to know where I am, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on my show.
So, well, you have your own portal, your own website.
Yes, MatthewZachary.com and AdaPatience.com.
Awesome. Awesome. So then for you to be on talkradio.nyc from your studio, would this be your first video representation of Stupid Cancer, so to speak?
Oh, no. I've done plenty of live camera, direct-to-camera interviews, and I mean, live TV, live everything. I just think it's full circle that, you know, people are watching this now not on a dial-up modem.
That's true. That's true. You know, I mean, my God, the last time I heard a dial-up modem, it was 1997.
You know, like I used to have a soundboard when we did the Stupid Cancer Show, so I could like hit these buttons and like I could like hit like Homer going "Nope!" or whatever, and like we had a modem sound like "Eek!" We could do that.
Wow. I'm having my moments when you just did that noise. I still have lots of questions, and I think we're about to head towards our second break. But I think if anything, the authenticity of radio, I can see, especially when you're talking about something so it's not unique, brain cancer, but from your story point of view, I think I would have an easier time of listening and believing it just by hearing it rather than seeing it.
Yep.
You know, although it's just giving me thoughts about, you know, the way I try to use my voices of disruption. I'm trying to create social change in my own way. And in today's world with AI and video and whatever, that's the way I'm used to thinking we create an impact. But the one thing I want to share with the audience before we go to break is that not only have you relearned how to be that musician, but you actually used your musicianship to go to Congress and actually play concerts for fundraising for cancer, correct?
I did back in the day, and that will probably be starting up again soon.
That's what we will start the next segment with, especially when we also talk more about how we are patients. Alrighty. So ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned right here on talkradio.nyc, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitch. We will be back in a few.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC as we explore healing, self-discovery, and the space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversation guides you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Now, let's go right into your music advocacy aspect of your career. Oh, and unmute first when you have a chance.
Look at that. Who knew I had to unmute these days? God knows, this is the story of the 2020s as you're on mute. I'm in a great place because I'm finally getting back to my roots and I'm able to look at where I can get back on stage, what my performances can mean to me, how I can leverage it into what my message is to other people, and where it kind of weaves into what my goals are for the next 10 years. So a lot of this has been catalyzed by the fact that my first book is coming out in January, from Wiley, and I'm incredibly excited. My whole universe is like, oh my God, Matt's got a book. He's going to tear a hole in something when this book goes out there in January. So the pre-sales are January 12th, and pub date is May 19th, and it'll be on MatthewZachary.com. But the book is called We the Patients: How to Understand, Navigate, and Survive America's Healthcare Nightmare. And it's a bit of a comedy history book from the patient's perspective on the last 120 years of why we can't have nice things. That's kind of the elevator pitch for the book. It talks about the highs and the lows and some of the heroes we've never heard of before, what success looks like, where we are now, how to life hack your way through some of the crap. But it kind of ends on a nice high note, which is that I believe that it's time for America to rethink what advocacy means. And all of that was going to be released to the world when the book launches with my first public concert at Lincoln Center on April 28th.
Awesome.
So that is the coming out day for me. This book's going to be out there. The pub date's a week or two later. And I'll be launching a new social movement of the same name, We the Patients, which surprisingly has never been a thought before in American history. And I don't say that lightly. Every angry mob in America figures out how to organize and become a lobby and become a PAC. And then basically they get to pick their political leaders. The NRA has 4 million members, and yet they control so much narrative. Of course, they're based on constitutional rights or the interpretation of constitutional rights. Planned Parenthood, ARP, the military, everyone has a PAC. The question I have is, what would happen if we started to look at the cancer community alone? Is 40 million Americans. That's real data. 40 million Americans comprise. There are 19 million survivors and roughly 1 point, it's weird to say like 1.5 people per cancer survivor. It's like, yeah, the top half of my dad is my advocate. But roughly 40 million Americans would agree on a single issue narrative. And what is that issue narrative? What would we want to see if we organize as the cancer lobby, the first ever voter bloc based on patient needs? What would that mean to Wall Street? What will that mean to Main Street? What will that mean to industry? Who the gun manufacturers of the NRA would be the drug manufacturers of the cancer movement. The very idea comes down to one issue. It really boils down to one issue, which is in polling, thousands of people that I happen to know, and this is also, you can search for this, this is true data. Cancer patients are more afraid of bankruptcy than cure. More cancer patients or more people who could get screened and then get diagnosed for cancer delay that treatment because they're afraid of going broke. Medical oncology debt is 66% of all bankruptcies, and two-thirds of all cancer patients face medical debt when they're in care. These are real data points on wethepatients.org. And if you go there, it'll scare the crap out of you because this is real data. And it's not wonky data from an academic institution or some doctor telling you what to think. This is the people's data. The idea isn't about, I would say, an entitlement or an asset or a nice to have. We're talking about protecting voters from the harm that health insurance brings upon them. And that harm may be physical, but financial harm. And financial harm affects state budgets.
Yeah.
So the working theory of what this will become as the electorate starts to form over the next 2 years, we want to see protection laws in our states that forgive oncology medical debt, because the math works out that more people will cost the system less money if you take that variable away. And the will actually have a budget yield by forgiving. We're not saying cancer is going to be free. Cancer for the concept is that an electorate of 40 million people would vote for a ballot initiative that gets mandatory debt forgiveness at a certain threshold in their states approved.
Right. Right.
And then the second part of what the cancer community really wants is, what the hell do I do when I step into the store I never asked to shop in? It'd be nice to have an ombudsman or a clinical care coordinator or some mandatory nurse navigator in place.
Yes.
So there's a second part of the idea of what a cancer lobby would want besides medical debt forgiveness.
Right.
Is we want mandatory nurse navigation. And those are the nurses who aren't just nurses. They're trained in specialties to help you figure out the loopholes, the strategies, unraveling your threads, getting you to care, dealing with your prior authorizations, and giving you mental health access.
Yes.
That's what we, the patients, is forming as. It's a slow burn. Anyone that wants to sign up, it's a pledge. There's no membership fees. We are looking to get about 1 million people signed up by the end of 2026. And then we will be surveying you, asking you questions, confirming our beliefs, looking at districts, and starting to identify the lawmakers who would be amenable to realizing that 20% of every one of the 435 districts is the cancer lobby.
You have just taken my focus of questioning into the political realm, but in a good way. So bear with me while I formulate a question that I didn't even pre-screen with you. You know about the Big Beautiful Bill. We all do.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know we're headed for the midterms in 2026. Mm-hmm. Are you planning this, not only your book release and your concert, but also everything that you've just said about how people can join on your website, in tandem with the midterms to create change on what's been done? Or has that been the motivation for you to create it, and whatever happens in 2026 could be a byproduct of, or probably could just be running in coincidence with We the People?
The original idea had nothing to do with the midterms.
Okay.
This all happened before they murdered that guy, the UnitedHealthcare guy.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Thompson.
Yeah, from
Trump.
By Luigi Mangione. Or
Who's, by the way, an anti-hero for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. Right. When you're celebrating the death of the CEO of UnitedHealthcare, that speaks to how much pain the American people are in.
Yeah.
And it cannot be ignored. And that his, what is it, his legal GoFundMe is like a $2 million now. Right. That speaks to a lot of things that's being completely disregarded in the narrative on the mainstream media. And I'm not like a mainstream media, you know, conspiracy theorist. It just isn't a narrative. It's the people's narrative. It's not the news media's narrative. So all of these ideas about if the cancer community was a voter bloc were long before this happened. If anything, and I say this with a certain degree of largesse, is they're kind of doing me a favor by getting more people more angry. You know, I look at the blue wave. I mean, look, I'm don't disclose my political beliefs, so I'm pretty much right in the middle with normal people, which I believe is most people are just normal. Remember normal? So little here, little there. That's fine with me.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
They're doing the work for us. Stripping out the subsidies, getting rid of cancer research, destroying pediatric cancer strategies, getting rid of DEI. Like, this is, these are bad. No, I hope no one voted for this. That's my point. Somehow America voted for this without realizing they're voting for this. I can guarantee you, if I go around the country and say, did you vote to kill kid cancer research? No, I didn't. I'm pretty sure that you're not going to say yes to that question.
Wow.
So the 26 midterms, I think, are starting to speak for themselves.
Yes.
So I don't particularly at the, and I have like three co-founders and a whole bunch of cohorts that you can see on the website. We're a team.
Yes.
And I kind of speak for the movement that's being nascently built right now, where this has to be done in a way that is as purple as possible.
Yes.
This is bipartisan. This is single yes. issue.
Yes.
Cancer can kill you whether you voted for this guy or that guy. It doesn't matter. What right. matters is you deserve protections from harm.
That's right.
And that is the most democratic way to think about this. That is the most patriotic thing to think about this.
Exactly.
Which is why it's we the patients.
Yes.
And not we the people.
Correct.
Because that's constitutionalism. And that's completely different from this conversation.
Correct.
So
correct.
I see the midterms as data that are going to inform the movement of the trajectories.
Okay.
But the single biggest issue that is not directly related to voter interest is how can you stop the cholesterol between your doctor believing you deserve this as your prescription and all the things in the way of you getting that?
Yes.
There are too many middlemen between you and your doctor. And that often means life and death. As
Correct.
Of this recording, I'm drinking. as of this taping,
yes,
2 weeks ago, a guy with liver cancer died waiting for an approval from UnitedHealthcare. They approved it 2 days before he died. They waited 3 months. There is more harm done by prior authorization
yes.
than any other mechanism in U.S. healthcare. More than bankruptcy, because you just kind of die. Then your debt goes away. So go to Tennessee, go to Arkansas, go to latte drinking Queens. Doesn't matter. Should anyone die because your health insurance determines whether you live or die? No, that is unacceptable. That is un-American. But there are ways to address it that are pro-capitalist. Because this is not Occupy Wall Street. This is not people over profits. That's a separate fight to have.
This it's about community banding together yes. to help with the narrative that we all really feel, regardless of what the system is currently presenting itself to be.
Right, because this isn't about what bathroom you pee in or abortion. It's not about that. What good is any of that if you die on hold? That's my argument. That is the argument and the positioning of the populist brand, We the Patients. We're going to unite and organize on the fact that we are sick and tired. Of health insurance determining whether we live or die.
Incredible. Incredible. But it blows my mind because I actually, truth be told, you and I had met earlier this afternoon and I had come back because I knew that this would give us the best show possible. But my father's occupational therapist was here in the room. Going over, just the appointment schedule for the holiday season. And I asked her, by the way, ever since the big, beautiful bill, have you already noticed any changes? And she said something similar, that she had a patient approval of 20 extra visits for, I think it was an Alzheimer's patient, but the insurance company basically decided not to increase beyond the standard 20 because they didn't want to use the insurance benefit. It didn't make any sense to me. But you've just echoed that from the example of the guy with liver cancer. So I guess if anything, you're hoping that this book and your concert is going to create some response to the big, beautiful bill and what it's already changing. Correct?
It's a big lift, but yes.
Okay, so that would be the go-to. But the midterms, like you said, is a data point. And if anything, the real data result happens in 2028. So I figure if anything, I really look forward. Well, I'm going to be at your concert. I just have to buy the tickets when they go on sale.
Yeah.
And, when we return, because we're about to take our final break, I'm going to share what I've been doing in the Lincoln Center area, a little bit of which you already know. But it's in relation to using this platform to do what I can to come up with a solution for everyone that's going from the stress of the big, beautiful bill, which you obviously have been doing, especially with cancer patients. All right, everybody, we'll just be back in a few. Stay tuned. On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody. And again, I am amazed already that 45 minutes has gone by so fast because we've only touched upon what you're doing. I'm going to publicly invite you to come back probably at some point in January, especially because you know as well as I do that you are going to be appearing in a documentary soon that was produced by Dr. Todd Otten, who was on Frank About Health last week and was talking about Suck It Up, Buttercup. You know, and you obviously are involved in that kind of advocacy that that film, that documentary discusses. Would you like to share a little bit about your segment in there? I know it's going to be released probably in February or sometime like that. Do you want to give a teaser about it after you unmute?
Story of my life. You're on mute.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of meeting Todd and his partner, Gabe Charbonneau, at Medicine Forward at the Physician Burnout Summit in 2022. Yes. And I kind of went down this rabbit hole of like, well, I don't want my oncologist to want to kill himself. That's a bad idea. You know, and what does moral injury mean in the scheme of how patients can be a voice for that? Because we're currently not. I don't know why that hasn't been the thing, but I can only imagine the cancer community would not want their oncologist to be suicidal.
Right.
And I say that with a degree of tongue-in-cheek because that's just how you have to start to think about it. It's too dark to not, like, have a little weird, you know, perspective on this. But what could the cancer community do from a legislative perspective as a voter bloc to mandate reducing harm for the doctors that are trying to cure us and practice Hippocrates?
Yes.
So Todd wanted to be on this documentary. He's like, Matt, we can't do this without you. Like, yes, you can. I'm like, no, we can't. Okay, great. Like, who are you, Dr. Todd Otten? And he wanted me on there to basically have this point of view. Like, yeah. That's what it is. Like, yeah, fine, Mark Cuban, Glonkum Fleck, that's great. They're doctors. That's fine. Mark's a billionaire Wall Street guy.
Shark Tank.
The argument is, where's the economic benefit of reducing harm in physicians?
Right.
This is the stupid country if they think that way. Who makes the most money when doctors don't want to kill themselves and pharmacists don't want to kill themselves and nurses don't want to kill themselves? That's how you have to think about it. But if there was an electorate that demanded this as part of policies that protect, that is where I'm like, I'm hanging my hat. This has to come from the grassroots up. And a lot of physicians that are now expats going into private practice and pharmacists going to private practice, they can now be part of the cancer lobby irrespective of them being cancer patients. This is, I remember, like, it's stupid cancer. We hired people. They're like, do I have to have cancer to work here? Like, no, it's a benefit. Be grateful you don't have it.
Correct.
Because this is not about cancer specifically. It's the single issues. Who wouldn't want to piggyback on a new political movement, bipartisan political movement, that is going to reduce harm,
yes,
extend life, and save money at the same time?
Right. Absolutely.
And that was what he wanted me on the documentary for.
But overall, from the moment we started talking at the top of the hour with your non-for-profit, your podcast, We the People, the upcoming book, your concert, your fundraising, and of course, your upcoming scene in this documentary, What would you say that your life with brain cancer has given you as a life mission? What is driving you overall? Because I could see you're on a mission that is bigger than the cancer itself, and thankfully, you know, but you definitely want to create a change. What is the biggest aspect of everything you've been doing that is forcing you to really fight and advocate?
The funny answer would be, if you have to ask, you'll never know. But true. The real answer is that if I didn't do it, it wouldn't get done. And I echo that amongst many of my peers.
Right. No, that is true. I kind of identify that. But for me, it's always been about removing stigmas and really understanding mental health. But something more serious like this, which I'm now responding to, the big, beautiful bill, the cutbacks, the NIH being defunded, mRNA vaccines not being taken seriously, or even God knows what's going to happen in 2026 with those Obamacare recipients. I mean, it really is scary. And it, you know, cancer is one cohort or segment, if you will, 40 million, as you said. But with everybody now struggling to finance their health care, I can only imagine mortality rates are going to increase now. Yep. Over the long haul. But why even get there? Why even be in that position? You know, and so it just tells me that we the patients, or we the people, or we the advocates really have to take charge, even more so now than ever. I'm correct in saying that, right?
It's all about organizing for the first time in American history. It's just,
yeah, it is the first time.
Organizing for the first time in 350 years of this company, a company, same
250.
Thing. This country is a company, basically. 250 yeah. years, math.
Yes.
We've never organized as a voter bloc, and we're sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Wow. Okay, that makes me then announce to everyone who's watching, as well as to you, that what I have been doing for the last 3.5 months, besides obviously my Voices of Disruption campaign on Frank About Health, is I've been working with my alma mater at Lincoln Center, the Fordham Gabelli School of Business, on developing a nonpartisan financial product to be introduced into the market, hopefully by the time your concert plays in April or May. Wouldn't it be nice that we're both at Lincoln Center around the same time?
That'd be ironic and fun.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if it will be fully developed or if it will be fully funded. I do know that the prototype design is already out there. The business plan is being generated. I was just at a conference on Monday showing it as an alternative to the existing HSAs, FSAs, insurance products, of course, government programs, especially those that are being cut. It seems to have appeal, but it is about, like you're saying, organization and spreading the word and making everyone aware that healthcare, unfortunately, has become a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
It has become just as valuable of an investment as buying your own home, or even, you know, you have to make a question. Do you invest, or do you survive your healthcare crisis?
Right.
And it has to be a choice,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I'm really hoping, and, you know, I'm not making any official announcements because of the fact that it isn't yet delivered or developed or, you know, I'm hoping 2026 will allow me to do exactly that. But if anything, I like I said, I want you to come back on the show, especially when your book comes out or when it starts the pre-sale cycle.
Yep.
But if anything, I would like to, when it launches, I would like to tell your viewing audience about it. Maybe that'll be the grassroots audience that will help both of us. I mean, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, everything's on the table. This is about unification.
Yes. Absolutely.
This country has been so bisected with propaganda and media and and partisanship just for the purpose of getting elected in power. This is not the country I want to live in. And I know this is not the country most people want to live in.
Correct.
And again, the sick shall inherit the earth.
I haven't thought of it that way, but that's exactly where everything is pivoting towards.
Yes.
That's a good point. Wow, I see we're 3 minutes to ending. I'm just going to give announcements to everybody. First, as I said, I will have you back on the show in January, if that's a good time frame for you. I don't know how busy you'll be. Good. All right. I know Dr. Todd Otten will be back on the 8th of January. And
totally kidding.
Oh, okay. I thought I was giving the wrong date, but
no,
I know
I'm
what
totally
you mean.
kidding. I'm totally kidding.
All right, cool. And I just want everyone out there, if you remember the show that I did with Dr. Dale Atkins when she talked about her book, The Turquoise Butterfly, she will be on the Today Show on the 5th of January at 9 a.m. on NBC or your affiliated station. My voices of disruption, or my disruptors, as I call them, are making movements happen. And I'm hoping to join the bandwagon while at the same time continuing my support of Frank About Health on talkradio.nyc and wherever it's distributed online. I want everyone to know that if it wasn't for Sam Leibowitz, Emily Schulman, Jessica, the engineer behind the scenes, Samantha Rogers, Frank About Health wouldn't have grown as much as it has, especially in the last 6 months. But believe it or not, because of our healthcare crisis, I think that has also fueled the show. It has fueled us meeting, as long as all the other people that are involved with the documentary. I am signing up for your movement, We the Patients. And I just want everyone out there to continue watching Frank About Health in the new year, as well as to be on the lookout for my documentary, Being Frank for a Healthy Future, which is available now on YouTube, but I'm going to do my best to make it go viral out there on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, during the next 2 weeks, because on the 31st of December is the 1 year anniversary since we lost our dear friend Aretha Gray. And it would be an opportunity to commemorate her life, because she truly was an advocate too, especially for seniors, people suffering from dementia and cardiac problems. And I'm just going to make the next 2 weeks during our holiday time an advocacy time frame. And I thank you again, MZ, Matthew, for being here. I look forward to you being here again. I definitely consider you an honorable disruptor for Frank About Health. And again, thank you, talkradio.nyc, for everything you've done for me this past year. And I will do my best to give back in the coming year. All right, everyone, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And for all of us, may 2026 be the year that we, the patients, win. All righty?
Bam.
All righty. So we're signing off now. Thanks for watching. We'll see you all in January. Bye-bye.